The Lord Jesus came into Jerusalem on the first Palm Sunday. He fulfilled a prophecy of Zechariah 9, where the king would come on a donkey. He specifically says a young donkey. It had not been ridden before, which I put in the classification of a miracle, that you could ride a donkey through a noisy parade and it would work if it hadn't been, as we say, broken or ridden before. We would have expected Jesus to be happy on Palm Sunday. So many were saying, "Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord." But Luke 19 account says he was actually crying when he saw the city. He was crying over that they would reject him. The public may have liked him in some cases, but the elite, the government elite, the religious elite at the temple, they did not want him to be their king. Jesus was crying over that and predicting that soon the city and the temple will be destroyed. And they were destroyed in AD 70. He said, "Not one stone will stand upon another." And even today, the temple platform is there, the foundation walls, but everything off top has been scraped off, and there are all kinds of broken rocks down below that fell such a long time ago. So he was crying. He came in on Palm Sunday. The next major event would be the Passover Supper, we call the Last Supper, in which he started communion. I thought not to make a full sermon on that because we have been going verse by verse through 1 Corinthians, and we have studied the Last Supper in detail when we were in 1 Corinthians chapter 11. All four Gospels have the Last Supper. Just as with Palm Sunday, Luke added words. He added words to Palm Sunday. He added words to the Last Supper. Jesus said these, but his quote is longer. He said, "This is the blood of my new covenant." The other three say covenant. He said new covenant. We would say New Testament. "This do in remembrance of me," which is Luke, and also Paul. Another evidence that the early church was correct, that Luke and Paul were together, and Luke is the author of the Gospel of Luke, is there are phrases together like on Palm Sunday. So we go from riding into the city on Palm Sunday, and then we go from the Last Supper. Let's turn to Luke 22, and we'll look a little bit at the trials of Jesus this morning. We will mention the other trials that happened in the book of John here in Luke 22, at the very close of the long chapter, verse 66, would be the daytime trial, really early at sunlight. We would say at dawn. The daytime trial with a greater number of the Sanhedrin members. There were earlier trials with less people, and they were in the night, and the rooster was crowing. We'll mention them, but then we will study the last paragraph of Luke 22, verse 66. "When it was day, the council of the elders of the people," bigger group of them, "assemble, both chief priests," religious, "and scribes," we'd say teachers, theology teachers, "and they led him away to their council chamber, saying, 'If you are the Christ, tell us.' But he said to them, 'If I tell you, you will not believe. And if I ask you a question, you will not answer. But from now on, the Son of Man will be seated at the right hand of the power of God.' And they all said, 'Are you the Son of God then?' And he said to them, 'Yes, I am.' Then they said, 'What further need do we have of testimony? We have heard it ourselves from his own mouth. This part of the trial begins when it was daybreak. The whole council, now they didn't invite everybody, because Nicodemus wasn't there and Joseph of Arimathea wasn't there. They didn't invite people that would have favored Jesus, but it's a larger group. Jesus had already been arrested in the middle of the night with the rooster crowing. He'd already had a little bit of a trials in the middle of the night. We can already say that this trial was illegal. They arrest a person and then go to find charges. Don't know of anything wrong that they will charge him with, but they arrest him and then go find the charges. Also, while you can arrest in the middle of the night, you cannot have trials in the middle of the night. That's the way it was in Israel and Rome. That's the way it is now here. You wouldn't have a trial at 3 in the morning and only invite some of the judges, some of the jurors. John 18 refers to the first trial. They went to the father-in-law, Annas. Now, they're still called high priest. Like we might call a former president, still call him president. President Carter, President Obama, President Trump. And so the former high priest, Annas, was still called the high priest. He was the first trial. In John 18, why do you question me? Question those who have heard me. What I spoke to them, they know what I said. So that's a father-in-law. Next one was son-in-law, Caiaphas, son-in-law, probably all in the same house. Probably the high priest's palace had many, many rooms, and father-in-law lived in one place and son-in-law in another place. So there's two judges, but they're probably just moving him across this house. Jesus was probably near a window, and Peter could see what was going on. He could see Jesus, and Peter's outside. They let him in. Probably they knew that he sold fish. But Peter and John were the fish salesmen. They can come in. And they see Jesus, and Peter denies, I know who he is, and the rooster crowed. So these are the previous trials before our section in Luke. When it was very, very early, they bring him to this greater group. And when it was daybreak, there's a greater group, still not 100%, because they're not going to invite the believers to it. So it's still not a full council of elders, but more than what they had. And they went to the council chamber, which is probably near the temple. And first, if you are the Christ, Greek is Christ, anointed one. Messiah is Hebrew, anointed one. If you are the Messiah, tell us. And Caiaphas was the main speaker, but of course it has plural here because there was more than one speaker, but Caiaphas is the main speaker. And he's going to answer that. But first he says, if I asked you a question, you would not answer. That's his way of saying is, why do I answer you? You didn't answer me. And that had just happened in this same, shall we say, final week, often called the Passion Week. He had just asked them, the baptism of John, was it from humans or from God? And they would not answer him. So it was true they would not answer him. And they had not answered him, and he's saying it would be fair if I didn't answer you at all. But he sort of gives an identification answer. Before saying, yes, I am, identification answer, he does quote. Verse 69 has a quote. It is Psalm 110. It's also Daniel 7. And my Bible reference, there is no Daniel 7, which makes me kind of wonder why it should be a Daniel 7. Psalm 110, the Lord said to my Lord, sit on my right hand. So two Lords, even in the Old Testament. God the Father, God the Son, even in the Old Testament, Psalm 110. And the Son of Man would rule. The Son of Man is also in Daniel 7, where the Son of Man comes before the Ancient of Days, and quote, dominion and glory and kingdom, that all peoples, nations, and languages might serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion. So Jesus already gave an answer. Who are you? I am the coming world ruler. I will sit next to God and rule everything, and I will come down to earth, and I will rule all the peoples and nations of the earth. Well, that's kind of already an answer. But they keep going. They had asked him, who do you say that I am? And so now he answers that in verse 70. Are you the Son of God? And they're thinking a son of something is like that something. Sons of Belial were evil people. A son of God would have the characteristics of God. Do you have the characteristics of God? And the answer here in the original is a double answer. Yes, I am, ego of me. I am me. I myself am a stress. I am the Son of God. And then the group, Caiaphas the leader, the council, we have heard it ourselves, and this will be the death penalty. Adding a little bit here about history, this is about the time when the Romans took away the power of the death penalty. All the way through the Old Testament, even when they were under the Persians and Babylonians and Assyrians, they had the power of death penalty in their court. Genesis 49 verse 10 said that the judge's staff shall not depart from Judah until Shiloh comes, the one who brings world peace. The taking away of the power of the court should have been a sign to them that the Messiah had come, but they didn't catch it. Just like when he rides in on Palm Sunday, you did not know the day, which is probably the day when Daniel's 69 of the 70 weeks of years runs out to the day. They did not know the time of his coming. Power to execute was taken away by the Romans, and it should have told them that the Messiah had come, but that's the reason they have to go to Pilate in the first place. So now they go to Pilate, and we move on into Luke 23, where the first thing they do in Luke 23 is they positively lie to him. So let's look at Luke 23. The whole body of them got up and brought him before Pilate. Then they began to accuse him, saying, we found this man misleading our nation and forbidding to pay taxes to Caesar, and saying that he himself is Christ, a king. So Pilate asked him, saying, are you the king of the Jews? And he answered him and said, it is as you say. Verse 4, then Pilate said to the chief priests and the crowds, I find no guilt in this man. But they kept on insisting, saying, he stirs up the people, teaching all over Judea, starting from Galilee, even as far as this place. Verse 2 is a complete lie. We found him forbidding to pay taxes. Well, he had just said in that same week, in Luke 20, shall we pay taxes or not? Show me a coin. They showed him a Roman coin. We call it denarius. Whose image is on the coin? Caesar's image. Then render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God. He had just said that it was right to pay taxes. So bringing him to Pilate and saying he has forbidden paying taxes, that's just a lie. It is true he said to he was a king. Now, further talk with Pilate in John 18 is he was stressing, I am the king of truth. That's John 18:28. So, I am the king of truth. Pilate began very skeptical. What is truth? And I would think in this section right about in here, Pilate is skeptical to begin with, but then he gets a message. And in Matthew 27:19, he got a message from Mrs. Pilate, quote, have nothing to do with this man, for last night I suffered many things in a dream because of him. And Pilate's attitude starts to change. He seems like an agnostic, philosopher, skeptic, what is truth? And he gets a message from his wife about a supernatural dream. And there were in Roman history a dream of Mrs. Caesar thing. She thought her husband was going to be killed, and he got killed the next day. So Romans were spooked by dreams. So he goes from being, shall we say, a agnostic skeptic to getting kind of supernatural. Mrs. Pilate gave a message of a dream, and then the next thing is, who are you? Who are you? Got a message from my wife. Who are you? So we had father-in-law Annas, son-in-law Caiaphas, Sanhedrin, the whole group, then Pilate. We've done that far, but now he's going to go Pilate to Herod, then Pilate. And just like on Palm Sunday, some of Jesus' only words are in Luke, this trial before Herod is only here. It's only here. It's part of the reason I picked Luke, verses 6 and 7. When Pilate heard it, he asked whether this man was a Galilean. And when he learned that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who himself also was in Jerusalem at this time. They had charged Jesus and said that he taught all over the place, and he taught in Judea, and he taught in Galilee. And then Pilate actually paid attention. Oh, he's from Galilee. Herod ruled in Galilee, Pilate down in Judea. Herod's in town. We'll send him over there. That was Pilate's way of getting out of this mess. Send him over to Herod. He's actually part of Herod's jurisdiction. They're both in town. Neither one of them lived there. They both come to town for the Passover. Pilate came from Caesarea. Herod came from Galilee. Actually, the capital is Tiberias. They're both in town. So let's send him over here and get out of this trial. Verses 8 through 11. Now Herod was very glad when he saw Jesus, for he had wanted to see him for a long time, because he had been hearing about him and was hoping to see some sign performed by him. And he questioned him at some length, but he answered him nothing. Just won't talk with him. Talk with Pilate, not going to talk with Herod. Verse 10, and the chief priests and the scribes were standing there, accusing him vehemently. And Herod with his soldiers, after treating him with contempt and mocking him, dressed him in a gorgeous robe and sent him back to Pilate. The Christmas Herod, often called Herod the Great, Bethlehem and so forth. He passed when Jesus was young. Jesus could come back from Egypt. Herod Antipas was his son. That's this Herod. Herod the Great, Christmas. Herod Antipas, should we call him Easter? He's the one who killed John the Baptist. He had put John the Baptist in prison, and daughter-in-law Salome out of Josephus did a dance, and I'll give you everything, what do you want? And to his shock, I want John the Baptist's head on a platter. So Herod killed John the Baptist. He had not yet seen Jesus in person. He knew about him. He wanted him to come and do some tricks. Now, that does tell us today about people who would like Jesus to take away the problems, Jesus to take away my needs and then get lost. Don't really care that much about forgiveness. Don't really care about trusting in Jesus as Savior and going to heaven. There's Herod. Do some tricks and get lost. He won't talk with him. He sends him back to Pilate, and they do put on a robe on him. Here is a gorgeous robe. In the book of Mark, it doesn't talk about going to see Herod, but it does talk about he had a purple robe on. and in the book of Mark, must have come from these people. So they put a robe back on him and send him back. We will look at verse 12. Now Herod and Pilate became friends with one another that very day, for before they had been enemies. There are many people and places and events in the Bible that are outside the Bible. Again, there's at least 105 people in the Bible that are outside the Bible. Maybe as high as 120, but at least 105 and as high as 120. Jesus is outside the Bible. Pilate's outside the Bible. Herod is outside the Bible. But among the fact that they were enemies, we know more outside the Bible about why they were enemies. One thing is Pilate had brought shields into Jerusalem. These shields had a name, Caesar, on it. And all the people objected. They called it an image. He's bringing images into the temple. Well, thinking about it, there were no pictures on it. So why would he think bringing shields with the name Caesar on it's a problem? But they sent four people to Rome to complain about Pilate bringing images into the temple, and it is believed that the speaker of this was this Herod, the main leader that went to the Romans and complained about bringing shields into the temple. So they had been fighting back and forth. There's another one that I think is fits. If you'll let me reference Paul Meyer, the Lutheran historian at Western Michigan University, he wrote a book on Pilate. I used to see him from time to time when I was a kid. He's a generation above me, but I'd see him doing college lectures. But he references that there was a guy in Rome named Sejanus, and Sejanus was probably a friend of Pilate. And from outside the Bible, we know that the Caesar killed him. He stuffed rags down his throat, tied up his arms and legs, and threw him in the river. And he probably was a friend of Pilate's. Might have gotten him the job as governor. So when they said, "You are no friend of Caesar if you don't kill him," they were threatening to go to Caesar again and complain about Pilate and maybe announce he's friends of the guy you just killed for treason. At this point, Pilate washed his hands. Pilate gave up. It fits the history of it very, very well. So Pilate wanted to give a pardon on Passover week. Every other Passover, they would let somebody be pardoned. He figures that they would pardon Jesus and not Barabbas, who was a violent robber, not just a little thief, you know, a violent thief. He figures that's the one they'll pick for the Passover pardon. But they kept calling, "Release Barabbas," relative to Jesus, "Crucify him, crucify him." Jesus will have to carry his cross, and he will start to die at 9 in the morning and over with about 3. There will be darkness over the city. That's here in Luke, but I'd like us to go to Matthew 27 at the final close of Matthew 27 for a few more events in the city. We'll read verse 45 about the darkness. Then we will read verses 50 and following about the earthquake and the veil in the temple being torn. 27:45. Now from the sixth hour, darkness fell upon all the land until the ninth hour. Darkness. Verse 50. And Jesus cried out again with a loud voice and yielded up his spirit. And behold, the veil of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom, and the earth shook, and the rocks were split. And the tombs were open, and many bodies of the saints who have fallen asleep were raised. And coming out of the tombs after his resurrection, they entered the holy city and appeared to many. Now the centurion and those who were with him, keeping guard over Jesus, when they saw the earthquake and the things that were happening, became very afraid and said, "Truly, this man was the Son of God." Many of Jesus' enemies said he could do miracles. I keep stressing that over and over again because people I've talked with that said Jesus didn't do any miracles, the first thing I think is a good answer, his enemies said he did. They just said he did it by the power of Satan. But even his enemies at the time said he did miracles. Also, there are public events in the Easter story that had to be true or the rest of the book is discounted. Last week we talked about Lazarus being in town after his own funeral and Lazarus being on the Palm Sunday parade. Well, how do you put that in a book if it didn't happen? How do you put that Lazarus was in town after his own funeral and many people were coming to see Lazarus as well as to see Jesus? How do you put that in a book if it's not true? And then if it's true, Lazarus was alive after his own time in the tomb. Here you have other things that are very, very public events. It got dark for 3 hours. There was an earthquake, and the veil in the temple was ripped from top to bottom. That veil, that tapestry, was from your thumb to your finger. That's how thick it was. It's not just going to fall apart naturally. That's how thick it was. And ripped from top to bottom. Now everybody would know whether it got dark. Everybody would know whether there's an earthquake. And many, many priests, only the high priest could go in the Holy of Holies, but many priests could go into the holy place, moving the tables of bread, lighting the candlesticks, putting altar of incense on fire every morning and evening, and all these priests could tell that veil was ripped top to bottom. In Acts 6:1, many of the priests became obedient to the faith. Well, I've been doing this many, many years, so I'm probably repeating the illustration, but in the old days when I went to seminary in Washington, D.C., I would think about this when I would go to the archives. And you would say, how could you get away with saying it was dark in Washington for 3 straight hours? There was an earthquake in Washington for 3 hours. And how could you say the Star Spangled Banner split from top to bottom in the museum? How would you get away with that if it weren't dark and there weren't an earthquake and something happened? So here is the tapestry, very, very thick, torn from top to bottom, and many, many priests became obedient to the faith. A good thought for the book of Hebrews is that it was written to priests who had become believers. When the Romans came with their army, the priests were Christians. They were thinking of going back because the Romans were coming to destroy the temple. And the book of Hebrews was all these priests that were saved, and they knew whether the tapestry was split top to bottom. So all of these events had to be true, and it had to be true that Jesus died on the cross. His conviction by Pilate is in non-Christian sources. It's in Josephus, who's Jewish. It's even in the Roman authors, Suetonius and Tacitus. The life of Jesus and death on the cross, historical. As far as it being dark, I'll go back to Paul Meyer. It's dark in Israel, but there were early Roman authors that said it was dark all over the world. Well, his name is Thallus, AD 52. That it was dark all over the world, writing back and forth with the, we would say, Christian apologists, Christians defending the truth of Jesus. The trials of Jesus were very unfair. they arrested him before there were any charges. You're not supposed to arrest people and then go fishing for charges. There was trials in the middle of the night when not all the judges were invited, but they were in the middle of the night. The main charge is he says he's the Son of God, which he agreed to that. Yes, I am, emphatic. Are you the Son of God? Twice. I certainly am. Then upon his death, it had to have been dark. There had to have been an earthquake. That great big thick tapestry had to have been split for all these priests to become obedient to the faith. All these things were public events. Now, when he rose from the dead, he only appeared to Christians, except a few that would become Christians, like his half-brother James and Saul on the Damascus Road. But his miracles were known to all. The empty tomb was known to all. And these very public events had to be known at all. It is a reliable story, trustworthy. And now we hope many people think about it this time of year especially, and many people trust in Jesus as Savior. Will the musicians please come?